Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems. On the island of Maui, they've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
That is a heck of a lineup of coonskin hats,
you know,
right there.
So
on that
today,
set of antlers.
Today, last render that we talked about, Crockett, I had everybody wear a coonskin hat. Would anybody like to wear a coonskin hat?
I was actually going to bring my own.
Oh. Yeah?
But I didn't, you know, I didn't know the quality of y'all's hats.
Oh, well, that's too mediocre at best. Mediocre at best.
I didn't want to be outmatched on coonskin hats.
Yes.
The guy who made those coonskin hats could not be trusted, so I hear rumor that he's got four more that he's been making for about 6 months.
We're going to do something with these hats at some point. And hey, speaking of coon hides, two nights ago,
big news.
I had two dogs. I have a squirrel dog that runs loose all the time, Tim. He is the most responsive dog to human mind, will, and emotion that I have ever been
true.
Around. Like, you can be like thinking something and kind of glance over to it and he'll be like, oh, we're talking about that. Like, he's hyper in tune, like ridiculously in tune. So he runs around and he's normal. My really good squirrel dog is so good I can't let her run loose because she'll just hunt herself to death or end up, you know, running off.
She gets treed on things for hours at a time every time she's off.
So a few days ago I turned her loose just to let her run. In the summer I just let her run, and I like to keep my neighbors in check. I like for dogs to just be treed for hours, just like close to the house, just to let people know that this is not suburbia.
Just when you think they're going to start showing up
just
to eat.
Right when they think they're going to start paving the road and putting in nice $400,000 houses and stuff. I want people to come down here and try to buy land and be like, man, there's some hillbillies.
Have you ever had one of your dogs tree a squirrel down here at the marina, like 200 yards down the road?
Where the
sailboat is.
Yeah. That's the way we like to keep this place. We've got some boats on our road far, far from any river systems or lakes or oceans.
That's when you know you're living right.
Yeah, that's right. So I had Tess running loose, and she's my good squirrel dog. And about 30 minutes before dark, two nights ago, I hear both of them just on a hot track and get treed.
and they're up here in what I call the possum funnel. I've got on this land that I've got here, which isn't a big piece of land, those dogs tree possums in like one spot. And there's no rhyme or reason. There's no big den trees. But if they get treed and it's on a possum, which they tree a lot of possums, they'll tree within a 50-yard radius. I don't understand why they always tree there. But Tim was treed hard. Tess was right there. I mean, it was just beautiful treeing. And I was busy and just didn't even bother with them. At least an hour and a half. And I'm being conservative. It was probably it's closer true. To 2 hours. I mean, it was when I wanted to go to bed at like closer to 11. They were treed hard, continued to be treed hard out there. And I was going to bed, and I told Bear John, my son, I said, how about you go feed those dogs and go shoot that possum out of the tree that they got treed? And he said, Dad, I'm not interested in shooting that. And so I went out to my truck and got my DEET. Because, man, if you walk in these woods right now,
yep,
you will be covered in ticks.
Yep.
And chiggers. And so I went out to the truck and sprayed down with DEET. This is like right before I'm going to bed. And I just am trying to retrieve my dogs. Take my 22 because right now in Arkansas, it's war on varmints.
Yep.
Trying to save turkey
chickens.
Poults. And chickens. And yeah, we've had serious predation this spring on our chickens.
Oh, yeah.
And I go out there and Tim and Tress are just treed hard and Tim is extra pumped. And I shine up in this incredibly bushy tree. I didn't think I was going to see it, Brent. And sure enough, there's a coon there, which is the first time they treat a coon. Tim, the squirrel dog, he should be Tim, the possum dog. He loves possums more than anything. You can hear it in his voice when he trees the possums. Squirrels are a distant second. Pack rats are third. And number four is a coon. And anyway, speaking of coonskin hats, I shot that coon out.
Well, I think there's another angle to this story. We're sitting inside, and Bear really wants to start a business, and he and I are talking official business. We're talking about paperwork and what taxes would look like and all this kind of stuff, and we're having this real in-depth conversation. We're on computers, Googling on the couch, and Clay walks in with a coon in his hands, a dead coon in the dogs, and we look up, and I don't even pause. It's like, yep, Clay's got a coon in the house.
Again?
It took me a double take before I realized, shoot, you've got a live coon in our house. It was dead by that
point. It was dead.
And the dogs, he wanted to get a picture with them, and the dogs were just ridiculous. You could tell they were pretty pumped up.
Here's something I'm taking from this. I don't know if y'all, did anybody else hear? When he said, Bear John, go out there and kill that possum. He says, I have no interest in it. Had he told me that, and I was talking to my mom about accounting, I would have.
Yeah.
It would look like Yosemite Sam went through the wall.
Bear Newcomb. Man, that guy is
so I'm telling you, this
hard
is good.
At it. He put the hard sell on me this week for some stuff, too. So, I mean, he's in it
man.
To win it.
He
right
is in
now.
It right now.
That's good stuff right there, man.
Yeah. So we've got some regulars on the podcast, but we have Joe is not really an irregular. Joe's been
Joe. He don't look it.
We've got Joe Wilson with us.
That's yet to be determined.
This is I've known Joe for many years now.
Yes, sir.
And Joe was on the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast way back.
And, OG.
Yeah, and Joe was on the Arkansas Image podcast that I did. If you remember when I went to the old Walton Five and Dime, and then we went into the Walmart Museum with the hologram. Joe was kind of my guide there. So you've heard Joe's voice if you're paying attention.
He's
to
been on
Bear
the
Grease.
Bear Grease more than Josh has.
Exactly. I was just going to say he was on original Bear Grease, and you never were you?
Josh has yet to be a featured guest.
I've never been on Bear Grease. I was on the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast.
Yeah, I didn't
mainly because
it'd
be like, I don't have any other content. Just get Spillmaker in here.
Joe, how do you introduce yourself to people if you have the open mic?
Well, if I had an open mic, I'd introduce myself as a father of two, a husband of one. I've got two dogs right now. It's driving me crazy. I just got a new puppy a week ago, so I'm a little bloodshot in the eye. But what was the saying that Dave Crockett said?
He said that he, about an accident?
No, about his, about the accident.
Well, he just said that his fame came on him completely by accident.
And so my fame has come on me completely by accident. So, you know, Clay knows this story, and I doubt the listeners do, but I throw the world champion squirrel cook-off here in Northwest Arkansas, and it come to me straight up by accident.
Hey, we got to – okay, listeners out there, he just dropped the bomb. Joe is the founder of the one and only world championship squirrel cook-off.
And it come to me by accident.
So tell me that.
So I was working in downtown Bentonville, and for the listeners who aren't aware of what that could be like, it's kind of like a Norman Rockwell painting. It's brick buildings, old buildings. It's where the retail giant started of Walmart. And I become sociable with a lot of people walking by. And the lady who's in charge of downtown Bentonville cornered me one day. And she said that Andrew Zimmern from Bizarre Foods had contacted them. And they wanted to do the Ozark edition. And I was the guy that they wanted me to fix this deal. And so this is a week after our football coach, Bobby Petrino had a little accident.
The accident heard around the world.
Yeah, exactly.
He had had a little accident, and so they
have to Google that. Everyone,
no, they don't. You do.
So they started questioning me on things they wanted to see, and they wanted to see a rabbit hunt, and I said I can do that, and they wanted to do a bear hunt, and I said I know some people, and Clay was part of that. And wanted a gig for Suckers in the River. I said, I got that covered. And they said, we want to do a crow hunt because our research shows that people in Arkansas eat crow. Now, mind
that's just
you,
me on a regular basis.
Now, mind you, this is a week after our football coach had some sort of accident.
Right.
And I said, ma'am, you're mistaken. I said, we really don't eat a lot of crow. Matter of fact, we don't eat any. And she said, no, sir, our research says that people in Arkansas eat crow.
Mm.
And I said, well, I've cooked crow before, and we ate it, but we'd been drinking, and people said that it tasted pretty good, so we could cook crow. And they said, what about squirrel? Do you do squirrel? Oh, yes, ma'am. I said, matter of fact, we cook the world champion squirrel. And she says, how do you know? And I said, because we throw the world championship. She said, when is it? I said, when y'all coming?
He didn't have a world championship squirrel cook-off.
Is that when it started?
Yeah.
When Andrew Zimmern came?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. I didn't know that.
She said, like, August 11th. And I said, you know what?
It just happens to be when we're having the cook-off.
And she said, no kidding. I said, yeah, that's when it is. And so as soon as I got off the phone, I started scrambling.
And what was the date approximately?
It was in August of 2000.
No.
That she was calling.
It was in August. She called.
Oh, she called. It's probably June. Yeah.
Okay.
About
so you had a couple months.
Dang. That still ain't no time, man.
And so I scrambled, got on the phone, and I called people, and I had teams from 7 states show up, and we had 24 teams. And at that time, I thought to have a judge at a squirrel cook-off, they needed to be certified by like the governor. So I had a district judge, a county judge. I had real judges. So that way I knew it was fair. Awesome. And plus I had a fat used car salesman.
Gotta have that.
That man knew squirrel. And I had a James Beard award-winning chef.
Mm.
And so the first year we did the squirrel cook-off, we had as random of things as you could imagine. You know, we had fried squirrel and we had gumbo and some gravy. But that's when we started having the squirrel pizza and the squirrel fried rice and things like that. So that show aired, I want to say, in 120 countries across the world. And
Andrew Zimmern's Bizarre Food. Yeah. That would have been 2014?
No, it was 2010.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
2010.
Wow.
Yeah, because you were on it.
Yeah.
Y'all made cracklings.
So it was Andrew Zimmern's Bizarre Foods. And Let me tell my side of that one just real quick. I had those people called me. Andrew Zimmern's people call me, and it's just I don't have any exposure to media at all during that time. And they say, "Hey, we want to do a show." I'd never heard of we didn't watch TV. I'd never heard of Andrew Zimmern. And this person says, we want to come to Arkansas and we would like for you to kill a bear on October 1st.
That's easy. Like,
okay, no problem.
And I was
what
like,
color?
Now, what do you mean you need it on October 1st? And she's like, well, that's when my crew will be in Arkansas and we need you to kill a bear. And I was like, ma'am, I can't guarantee that we can have a bear that day. But I remember very vividly what I said to him. I said, now tell me about this Andrew Zimmern and this show. I said, because if you're looking for a bunch of hillbillies to make fun of, you got the wrong guy. Like, I was like, I came in pretty hot.
Defensive.
I was super suspicious. And then the woman was like, oh, no, no, no. Andrew is so respectful of people's culture. And then as I did, like, I watched the show, I was like, oh, this guy's really cool.
Yeah.
So that was, well, and then the short version of our bear hunt was I just sent out like an APB to all my buddies. And I said, hey, if you kill a bear on October 1st, call me. Because that was close to opening day of season, maybe even the opening day of season. And one of my good buddies, Trey Clark, killed a bear on October 1st. And I called Andrew Zimmern's people, and they like made a beeline from Northwest Arkansas down to where we were hunting. Big, huge film crew.
Oh, yeah.
And they filmed us do everything in the world. We made bear cracklings out of that bear. But this goes on the same show that the World Championship Squirrel Cook-Off is on.
Yeah. Well, you know, another part of that is when it come down to the crow part, I had to fill this slot. And so I was friends with Phyllis Spears, and Phyllis Spears did Arkansas Outdoors cooking in a Dutch oven.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She'd cooked everything with a face, you know. And so I called Phyllis, and I said, Phyllis, I'm in a bind. I got to do some crow hunting, and I got to cook a crow. And being the sweetheart that she is, she says, hun, do I need to bring my own crow? And I said, it probably wouldn't hurt, Phyllis. So we go right down the road from us, and we had shot crows. We really had never hunted crows. We'd shot some, you know. And so we get out there, and we got a crow call, and we're calling and calling, and that spy crow comes up.
You know who I've heard is really good at a crow call?
The scout.
Yeah. You know who I've heard is really good at a crow call?
Who's that?
Steve Rinella. He's an ace.
I want to do more crow hunting, but so that old scout comes flying over, and one of my guys is a little loose, and so he started letting it fly at the scout, so that meant there's no more crows going to come. So that producer, I bet you remember him, his real slimy, long, greasy
long,
hair.
Long black kind of.
Smoking a big cigar.
Yeah, man.
He filmed Comb Over the movie. He traveled the country looking for the comb over capital of the world. Actually interviewed Donald Trump long before he was president.
Is that right?
So he says, what do we got to do to get these crows? I said, man, we got to load up and go to the store. So we went to the largest outdoor provider down in Rogers and walked in there with three shopping carts, and we bought bull blinds, we bought electric collars, a fishing pole just in case we needed it, all new camouflage and some camping gear because they were fitting the bill. Plus some decoys, and we showed up and could not get a crow, but Phyllis had a stunt crow in the back of the truck, and we launched that thing up and filmed some good B-roll a couple times. And
what do you mean she had a stunt crow?
She brought three processed crows and three fully feathered crows in the back of her big Dodge truck.
Like, not alive.
No. No. It didn't know that it was part of the show.
Okay.
But so Phyllis.
Hollywood.
Phyllis made, for the listeners who've never ate crow, I wouldn't turn your nose to it. Because a crow, their legs are the lighter color meat and their breast is the dark color meat. Huh. And I don't know what a Kansas crow or a South Dakota crow is, but an Ozark crow eats a lot of dead armadillos on the side of the road, right?
Yeah.
And she made a shepherd's pie, and then she made these little cuts of crow breast, which she had marinated. And they tasted more like beef than beef does.
Huh.
Mm.
Now, I've ate pretty near any animal I've ever seen, and I enjoy it. But my nemesis would be sweet potatoes. I can't stomach them.
You eat a crow, but can't stand sweet potato.
All kind of stuff.
I couldn't stomach a sweet potato, and she made that shepherd's pie, and I had to dig through the sweet potatoes to get to that crow meat. But to put icing on top of this cake here, crow meat is worth the eat. It's good stuff. So that show aired in 120 countries, and just like your son, I thought I could make a dollar off this deal. So I decided I was going to sell Squirrel Cook-Off t-shirts, and they were 20 bucks a piece. And come to find out, the shipping to Australia is more than 20 bucks. Yeah. So I lost at that deal.
Mm. A lot of overseas orders, huh?
Well, typically the orders would come in about 2 o'clock in the morning, and they were always for 4Xs. Because I think when that show aired in the middle of the night, there was some chubby guy eating Cheetos.
And he was like, Squirrel Cook-Off.
He was wanting a t-shirt. So since it was so famous, the next year we got the front page of the Wall Street Journal. And the Wall Street Journal come to Bentonville. The mayor wasn't happy. Okay. He thought the Wall Street Journal was going to run us through the mud. He said they were an East Coast bias deal, and they were going to put that hillbilly element on the deal. And I asked the mayor who he was most scared of. Was it the Wall Street Journal or me? And he said, you just don't want them here. He said, they've spent a lot of money making this town what it is, and we don't need that reputation. Mm. And I told him the last time that the Wall Street Journal had come to our town, there was a guy named Sam Walton who received the Medal of Freedom from a guy named George Bush who had a son named George Bush. And if it took a redneck and squirrels to get us back on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, somebody wasn't doing their job. And so we carried it on, man, and we've done it for a reason that's more than humor. We've wanted to show the world that we could take smallest of game and turn it into the biggest of meals. And some of the things, Clay, you've been there a couple times. The biggest thing to me has been to seeing the diversity of human beings that will show up to cook squirrel. Everybody thinks it's guys like us. No, there's hippies. There's five-star chefs. There's old people and kids and people of every color and creed.
Awesome.
Show up to cook squirrel. And sometimes the people that do the best are the people who've never even cooked a squirrel before. And so that's been the highlight of the thing. First and foremost, getting people back outdoors to hunt small game. That's how we learned the whole aim small, miss small thing takes place in the woods chasing squirrels and rabbits. And over the years, we've put a lot of people back in the woods. We may have caused some Lyme disease these things because it is a chigger and tick prone sport. But we've had a lot of good times, man. And
so it's been going on now for 14 years minus COVID.
Yeah, we missed 2 years of COVID and 1 year from me being lazy. Okay. And but we're coming back, and this year, September 23rd, we'll be in Springdale, Arkansas. It'll be our first time in Springdale. Arkansas Game and Fish has a beautiful new facility there.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get people to come to it. And once again, the squirrel's going to save the day.
Yeah. That's just right down the road for me.
So let's stop right there. September 23rd, which is a Saturday.
Yes, sir.
2023.
Yes, sir.
Springdale, Arkansas. And what's the name of that facility? I've been there shooting bows.
We'll have to add that in later, Clay.
Okay, yeah.
JB and John L.
Let me see.
Center.
Yeah,
Nature
it's a,
Center.
It's a very, very,
it's,
like a
it's awesome.
Multi-gazillion dollar outdoor facility in
that
Springdale.
Was built to rehabilitate the quail.
Okay.
They really thrive on quail habitat and all of that.
What's the name of it?
AGFC JB and John L. Hunt Family Ozark Highlands Nature Center.
It's just a little word.
Yeah. Austin Booth he'll be upset that we didn't get it on the first try. Sorry, Austin, but it's an incredible facility.
It is an incredible
facility. They have an outdoor 3D archery range. You can just walk up, shoot your bows. Big facility.
They have an indoor pellet and BB rifle shooting range as well for the kids. And so our goal this year is to bring the kids really into it. So we're going to have in the morning, we're going to do a pellet rifle shoot indoors. Don't be mistaken that we're just a squirrel eating competition here. we also have the world champion squirrel cleaning competition.
Mm. Oh, look at
that. Get in on some of that.
The reigning champion is Clifton Jackson of Arkansas, who has the most expensive squirrel rifle you can buy. It's named the Jackson Squirrel Rifle, and it's named after Clifton. He's been in charge of small game for several years here in the state of Arkansas.
How fast can he clean a squirrel?
Well, this isn't the squirrel like your dog's been treeing out here. This is a squirrel that's been inside my freezer for a long time.
Okay.
And so it's semi-thawed squirrel. Yeah. And we give you a knife, and we've had people assist by using their teeth, whatever it takes to get through this deal. I can't tell you how fast. He was the fastest.
Let me ask you this. Do you have to use a knife? Could I bring another implement to the competition?
You could. The rules on this deal is hopefully you bring your own knife, and hopefully you bring your own glove to keep you from cutting a finger off of, because I don't want to be responsible for that. So we've got that event. And
because
then,
I don't use a knife. I use a pair of clippers.
He's a very competitive squirrel cleaner.
I can see it boiling out right now.
1 minute.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm the fastest in the world.
He has competed.
But I'd be right on. I'd be hot on.
But you're saying
the heels
that guy looks a whole. That guy looks a whole lot like you.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm
Do
saying.
You know, I've been listening to this show since it started, and that's probably the least humble I've ever heard you.
Well, you remember when
he
was
just
running
have
the backhoe?
That confidence.
Yeah, when he was running the backhoe, it kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's just some things that about. Confidence.
Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research and real-world testing of forage products specifically for whitetail deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at WhitetailInstitute.com. That's WhitetailInstitute.com and use code BEAR for 15% off. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a goblin turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
So the other event is the world's hottest squirrel wing eating competition.
Oh, hottest.
Wow. Look at that. Like, squirrels like had wings.
Taste heat.
Oh, yeah. This is
pepper hot.
Yeah,
pepper hot.
This is, we take the hindquarters of the squirrel and bread them up, deep fry them, and then we pour molten lava of some Carolina Reaper and whatever else somebody grew in their garden.
That set the woods on fire.
Yeah. And that's a hilarious event. Sit there and watch. So we'll have live music.
Let me describe, and you can fill it in, but like when I've been there before, it wasn't at this venue, but if you have a team, which you could, anybody could have a team.
You bet.
So if you're from wherever you're from, how would they register?
So about the time this show airs, on our Facebook page, World Champion Squirrel Cookoff Facebook page, there will be the registry information, and we are going to limit it to 40 teams.
Oh, really?
Well, it's torturous to our judges. And
40.
Because
so only 40 teams can compete.
Only 40.
How are they vetted? Are they vetted, or just like first come first serve?
And Misty, I know you're a heck of a cook, right?
I just had some slightly above average
strawberry cakes you made.
And if you
fabulous.
Added a little squirrel to that, you might have a fighting chance of winning a
strawberry squirrel.
I mean, currently, how many world championships do you hold?
You know, I don't think I hold a world championship in anything.
There would be nothing prouder than make old humble Clay.
No way.
If he was to introduce
his wife. Cook a squirrel.
So our event is set up to where you got to do a entree and a side dish. Okay, and 80% of the meat used inside of your squirrel entree has to be squirrel. So that's not 80% of your overall dish.
Okay.
The meat. That's 80%
so
of the meat.
Like egg rolls.
Why did you say that out loud? Cut that out, Isaac.
Here we go.
Yeah, hey, the dishes that they have will blow your mind.
Squirrel jello.
I mean.
Oh, with grapes in it.
Yeah.
So, okay. I was going to describe, you would come to this event and there would be, if you have a team, if you're one of the 40 teams, you would have a booth.
Yep.
And there would be time frames during the day when you had to have meals cooked. But you also cook kind of for the public, for whatever you want.
I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be squirrel. If you got a good porcupine recipe, you're more than welcome to whip it up.
And people are just kind of wandering around, talking to the chef. It's always real fun to just go around and just ask people, like, what are you cooking? And, you know, a lot of people, I've never seen more squirrel costumes and, like, get up from people. Just random people.
Not even the
cooks, but just people.
It's kind of like when Star Wars comes out.
Yeah.
It's like the hillbilly version
of
Star Wars
com.
Premieres.
I guess I need to start making some squirrel hats.
Squirrel costume?
Squirrel com.
Squirrel com, yeah.
That's good.
I'm squirrel so glad com. I bought instead of rented.
So... Clay's right. As you're walking around, if you're a people watcher, like I know we all are, it is the perfect place to pull up a chair and sit and stare at what's showed up at this deal. Because we've had teams from as far away as the Netherlands.
Wow.
Really?
They even have squirrels in the Netherlands?
I'm not real sure.
You got to come here to cook them.
But we've had teams from the Netherlands. We've had a couple female bankers from New York City.
Oh, man. Wow. Oh, that's cool.
Who brought them in. We get West Coast teams. We've had teams from Canada. We had a judge from Italy come to do this. And so why I'm saying this is this ain't no joke. This is the real deal. When we crown you as a world champion.
You're the world champion.
You should never serve that squirrel on a paper plate again.
That's what I'm talking
about. There you
go. It's fine china. So you're doing an entree and a side dish, and your side dish should pair with your entree. And a couple...
What variety of wine goes best with...
It matters how you cook the squirrel. I mean...
Got it.
Dark meat.
But we had... up until a couple years ago, it was kind of blind. I give you a styrofoam box. You put your groceries in there. It turned it into the judges. And then I'd open up the box and give them to the judges. And they'd say, what is this? And I'd say, yeah, I have no idea.
Squirrel.
And so now we give the teams the opportunity. They put a 3x5 card inside that box. And it'll describe what dish they've turned in. Because if you know what it's supposed to be, it'll right. kind of taste like that.
Right.
Right? Mm, and
how many judges are there, Joe?
So we'll have 12 judges.
12
judges? Six on one side, six on the other. Each judge, you know, we have an odd set of judges and an even set. So depending on what your turn-in token says, if you're number two, you go on the right side. If you're number one, you go on the left. Because it is torture, man. Yeah. When you've got 20 dishes, that's an entree and a side, and there's a chance you'll have a number eight shot in any of that.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Got an orthodontist on the standby.
And so it's a workout to eat it. And as a judge, you sign up to eat everything we throw in front of you and judge it fairly. So most cooking competitions, if it's chili or brisket or steaks or whatever you're doing, everybody's in the same realm. So it's real easy to pick the best brisket from that day. This, everything's different. Mm-hmm. So we judge you on your own merit. If you make a squirrel meatloaf, well, we're judging on what we want as our best meatloaf.
Okay.
And how close you come to that
squirrel
mark.
Squirrel Kiev.
I'm just saying, don't make squirrel meatloaf for the championship cook-off. You're not going to win that thing.
Well, you know, squirrel meatballs placed really well in
really?
The past.
Can you give us a couple of examples yeah. of stuff that's won? I mean, it's stuff that you just would never dream of.
Oh, man. We've had Mexican dishes do really well.
Yeah.
I'll just put it to you that way. We've had a lot of Mexican dishes work out. We've had a lot of Italian dishes work out really well.
So squirrel does well with tomato.
Well, squirrel is the tofu of the woods, so it'll gather whatever flavor profile you throw at it.
And I can, when I was there, and I'm trying to remember, but there was one group that their whole thing was to make a Chick-fil-A sandwich.
I disqualified them.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because our rules are simple. 100% of the preparation of this dish has to take place on site.
Okay, they did something.
And so there's no marination, there's no prep work done. And to make that Chick-fil-A sandwich,
okay.
that meant you had to marinate it in pickle juice. That's yeah. the secret to the Chick-fil-A chicken.
Okay.
Is the pickle juice.
Yep. Well, the just as an example, though, even though this team got disqualified, I didn't realize it. These guys, like, their booth looked like a Chick-fil-A booth.
I love it.
And they made...
This thing's not on Sunday, is it?
The same little...
they wouldn't be open.
Yeah, it was good. You know, they made a little Chick-fil-A deal, and that was their thing.
Yeah.
There was a lot of Asian dishes. Oh, yeah. The BHA guys that I knew
Great
over
guys.
There, they made squirrel nachos, and we're feeding them to people all day.
Is it BYO squirrel?
It is, man. That's part of the game. So the game is to get people back in the outdoors. And so squirrel's not a commodity we can go to the grocery store and purchase. Ironically, I know Steve Rinella was just on CBS Sunday Morning, and he was the Martha Stewart of
yeah.
The Julia Child of the campfire.
So I'll throw my humbleness out here. I beat Steve Rinella onto CBS Sunday Morning. I was on it years before he was, and I was the first guy. You know, at the end of CBS Sunday Morning, there's a majestic scene of like a moose blowing steam out of its nostrils or an old blue herring just tiptoeing through the water. They got me to be the first guy to shoot at something.
Oh, really?
And so I'm sitting on Spavinaw Creek on a lawn chair, and about 3 feet from me is this dude from Seattle, Washington. And they brought their little goon with them who was from Manhattan, not Kansas. And the little guy's writing on a card, handing it to the guy to ask me the questions. And they're trying to burn down my house, I could promise you. as we're sitting there. They're trying to get PETA.
I mean, what are they interviewing you about? The squirrel cook-off.
Why we would kill something if we could go to the grocery store and just buy it.
Okay.
And, you know, your standard questions that come to a hunter from somebody who's not a hunter. And one of the questions was, surely you eat fast food? And I said, yes, sir, man. I said, an antelope will do 43, you know? And so I was one-upping him, and that was the game I was playing. So down the creek about 100 yards walks out this little old gray squirrel to take a drink of that cool spring water. And the little man from Manhattan, he says, could you shoot that squirrel at that distance? I said, oh, yeah, in the face. And so I lean up on this tree. And I'd done some TV. I'd done the Andrew Zimmern deal. I had never been around a camera like these guys' camera. I don't know what HD they were, but it was more than we got at my house, you know? And so they got two cameras in front of me, one behind me, that great big umbrella that's lit. And they said, whenever you're ready. And so I breathe in one. Pow, I shoot. And I've killed hundreds upon hundreds of squirrels. I had never killed one like this that was ready for TV. As that bullet just barely nicked him, he goes, and like a three-toed sloth, this thing is grasping at stones, crawling, playing it up for the movies.
Oh, no.
And the guy says, what are you feeling? What's your emotions? I said, I'm pretty upset. He said, about wounding that animal? Man, I missed it clean. I said, I'm upset because I don't get to cook it for you. And my mind's just running through on every excuse I could come up with because I thought the day this airs is the last day I'm going to be able to walk into my house, you know? And they cut it. They cut it out. And the show actually turned out really good. So whenever I heard Steve Rinella was on that show, and I thought, yeah, I was on there too. They about burned down my house.
Man, well, Brent,
yo,
can we get a commitment from you to be at the World Championship Squirrel Cook-Off?
Let me do this. I've got seat number one over there on the left-hand side that I'll put you down in the judging spot if you'll accept it.
40 squirrels.
I'm there, pal.
I got you.
Mark it down.
I got you.
Squirrels. This is big.
This is huge.
I got you. Now, Game and Fish just auctioned off one of these on the foundation deal.
Oh, really? A spot as a judge?
Yeah, as a judge.
I think they got like $400.
So you're going to be a judge?
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. I'd be honored to.
Yeah, man. We'll be honored to have you.
Yeah.
I know that you come qualified.
Yeah. I come from a long line of squirrel eaters and killers.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, expect this. If you're coming from a long distance, you should probably look for your hotel room because we've got multiple things happening that weekend. And so go ahead and get you a hotel. The event starts at 9 in the morning, should be wrapped up by about 4:30. But we'll keep you busy all day looking and laughing.
Does it cost money to get in?
Clay, I would never charge anybody for a good time. And so, no, it's free.
That's incredible.
That's great.
Man, okay. I will most likely be there.
Are we going to have an opportunity to eat squirrel just as a participant?
Yeah. So,
okay.
So,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Missy.
How long do they have to prepare it if they can't prepare anything off site?
So, what we do is first thing in the morning, about 8 o'clock, we'll have a meeting of the teams and we'll once again go through all the rules and regulations. At 8:30, I'm going to send my meat inspectors around. And this is to make sure there's no contraband squirrel inside them coolers. You know, don't be fooling me with some rabbits. Okay? And so we'll also test the meat to make sure that it's 40 or under.
Okay.
Because there's a chance you're going to eat it. Now, when you come and sample something, you're playing this game at your own risk. So we inspect at 9 o'clock. The team's fired up. And they could cook on any heat source. So if you want to cook on a Coleman stove, that's fine. If you want to cook on a $10,000 smoker that you won the Texas brisket competition in, you're more than welcome to cook on that. You can fry it. You can bake it. You could roast it. You name it. We've even had squirrel sushi. We've had squirrel ice cream. The desserts are kind of out there.
The hardest part about smoking a squirrel is keeping him lit.
That's right. That's right. You got to bite off the end of it first.
That's it. That's the trick.
And we hope to have, if anybody's listening and they have something, a group or somebody that needs a little bit of support, you can contact me and maybe we could get you a booth set up at that deal as well.
So you'll have some vendors.
Got to have some vendors.
Like, yeah. Local people.
Vendors.
Outdoor
and
stuff.
Organizations. Y'all know if we lose one generation of hunters, where we're at as a country, we're in trouble. And so y'all show and everybody who does it the right way is doing God's work on this deal. Because we're just a vote. We're inches away from losing our kids in the outdoors. And so if I could help promote our youth in the outdoors, if I could help bring back an old-timer that used to love squirrel hunting, if I could get him drug back out in the woods, then it's worth it. Because I could guarantee you, Clay, I ain't never made a penny on this deal. And I don't want to tell my wife what we haven't had because of it. So it's that important, and seeing these urban people show up and have their nose pointed up in the air when they get there, and by the end of it, you watch them walking around nibbling on a squirrel leg or something.
Yeah,
it's that's my success story.
Man, I think what you're doing, Joe. I mean, I've called you a hero before for putting this thing on. I absolutely love it.
Just like Dave Crockett, I stepped into this deal by accident, but it's given me some opportunities. You know, I was telling Brent earlier that I've got a nonprofit organization that we travel around the country and we feed firefighters, police officers, first responders a ribeye steak dinner, and that's off a bovine. That's not off of a squirrel. And
squirrel ribeye.
We've made 40,000 ribeye steak dinners across the country.
That's amazing.
To
steaks for sheepdogs.
Steaks for sheepdogs. And our goal is to show community. You could not get along with somebody. There's certain people in this country you may not like, but you'll eat at their restaurant. Breaking bread is really the secret to neighbors and friendships and all that. And we can always have a meal and work out our issues. That's whenever your guard's down, whenever you're eating, especially good food. And so 6 years ago in Dallas, Texas, a bad guy showed up. He killed a bunch of police officers. I seen an opportunity for me to slide in there and try to make a change. And we've helped people. We'll never win the fight. It's impossible to make everybody appreciate that we have sheepdogs out there taking care of us. Because people are going to dislike people regardless. But I know whenever our team shows up and we put smiles on faces, and every time you've spoken to people, whether it be at church or on one of your adventures, there'll be somebody who'll call you and say, I needed that day, you know? And that's my trophy. Is we'll leave a community and I'll get a phone call and there'll be someone I've never met before say, you don't know where I was at that day. And when you showed up and fed us, it gave me a clearer view that we were still together as a country. And I'm not saying I've saved anybody. I just know that we've touched hearts through ribeye steaks, some really good mashed potatoes, and some dang good green beans.
That'll do it every time. Man, that's incredible. Steaks for sheepdogs.
Yes, sir.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And you know, we're 100% volunteer organization. I don't know how I have the gas money to show up here today because everything I do is for free, you know. But we're born with the last name. It's kind of our brand. And I've listened to your stories about your boy being left out in the woods and all that. Well, he's a Newcomb. And I've got a last name of Wilson. And so I wanted to give my kids a solid foundation, a brand name. My last name given to my kids should be able to give them some opportunity to where people would know, well, Joe was a good old boy. So maybe that acorn didn't fall far from the tree on his son or his daughter. And I don't know if this is going to work or not, but I'm going to give them the easiest path to people believing, and if they say it, they're going to do it. So that's kind of how I stand on that deal.
That's awesome, man.
That's good stuff, brother.
Yeah. Hey, tell us about, and this isn't a sales pitch for Joe's spice thing, but it is.
Oh, shoot. Wilsonshire
sauce.
The sales pitch.
Tell me about, I've got questions. Stuff. Joe just handed me a bottle when I left him the other day, and I was like, what is this? And he said, put it on anything. It'll taste good. And man, it does. Wilsonshire sauce is a Kraft Worcestershire sauce.
See, you had a hard time saying it too.
yeah.
So I woke up one morning, same show, CBS Sunday morning, and they had the top five hardest words for an American to say. One of them was squirrel, and I already had that covered. And the other one was that Worcestershire, right?
Really?
Worcestershire.
I thought I said it really pretty good there. Worcestershire.
And so I thought, well, maybe I could do better. So I read the label on that Lee and Perrine's, and I went to three different grocery stores, bought some stuff, and it kind of looked like a lab inside the house. I kicked everybody out and said, leave me alone, I'm inventing something. And in my shop, I've got a fermentation refrigerator like most of us do.
Well, yeah, of course.
And I filled a big old jar full of a concoction, and about a month, I went out there and looked at it and didn't look right. Second month, heck, it looked even worse. Third month, it had grown a big skin over the top, and I hit it with a blender, took a tablespoon of it, drank it, sat in my chair, woke up in the morning, and I hadn't died.
That made me hungry.
And so I bottled 20 bottles of it. I sent it around the country to people that I knew would appreciate it. And Mark Lambert, who's a 7-time world champion of barbecue, I gave him a bottle, and he won an event with it. And he says, I need more. I says, you're in trouble. It takes 3 months to make it. And after about 2 years of him prodding me, we made Wilsonshire a commercial thing, and we've sold thousands of bottles of it. But, you know, right here in the state of Arkansas, we've got Townsend Spice and Supply, and they're out of Melbourne, Arkansas, a little small place. And they make all the rest of my seasonings, and I brought y'all some seasonings because if you're going to eat, you might as well make it taste good.
So where can we buy Wilsonshire sauce?
If you could spell it, you could go online and just type it in, and you'll find a place.
Man,
that's got it.
Josh, it's hard to describe. You get a bottle of what you realize is Worcestershire sauce,
right?
And you're like, how often do I use Worcestershire sauce?
I use it all the time.
Dude, you have got to.
When this deal's done, it's not normal.
If you want to flavor something, if you want a good, you know, there's five flavors.
This got the umami in there.
That's the umami is his savory Worcestershire sauce. That's the best way to get it.
It doesn't even make sense because you eat it, you drink it, or you don't drink it. I drank mine right out of that little,
jar.
We're going to have a drink after the show.
Clay's got a rabbit bottle that he just licks on.
It's good. It's good. Hey, we have We got a segue here. We got a segue. Big segue.
Let's do
it. Big swing.
Davy
Crockett.
Yeah.
Y'all ready?
I've heard of Davy Crockett.
Listen, you guys don't know it, but y'all have walked into a trap. Every one of you.
I feel like
because we have a quiz.
For years.
I have a quiz.
Oh,
for Davy Crockett, episode number two.
David.
So now, ding, 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 ding. Cue the music. We're now on a game show. And I'm going to see if y'all actually listened. Every time I tell Josh to come, Brent to come, I'm like, did you listen to the podcast?
You know we listened to
it. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, whatever, dude. You didn't listen to the podcast.
Yeah, sure we did.
Okay, so I have 7 questions.
Wait on me.
The first person to answer correctly gets 1 point. You will be charged with keeping your own score.
Are we raising our hands or are we just blurting it out?
Blurting it out.
Okay.
You will be charged with keeping your own score, but it'll be a buddy system. We will be monitoring you. All right. It's going to start out easy and get progressively harder.
Good.
Okay. In 1991, what country rock band released a cover
Kentucky Headhunters?
Bam, Josh Spellmaker. Let me read the full question. In 1991, what country rock band released a cover of the Ballad of Davy Crockett? The correct answer is the Kentucky Headhunters. Josh, had you ever heard that version
of it? It's a
great
version, though.
Did you like it?
I did like it.
Listen.
Have you heard it, Joe?
Oh, yeah, many times.
Yeah.
I have a bone to pick with you. It is the version. You know, I grew up in Hatfield, Arkansas. You know I heard that version before and watched the movie, the video. Like, I remember as a kid.
All the people with the coon skin.
There was this channel. Like, we had five channels in Hatfield. And then one day, all of us got 18, and one of them was More Music, which was
CMT.
It was this video. It showed music videos. MTV was not allowed in Polk County. So that was, like, my first experience
in
with
Polk
music.
In Polk County, like it. They wouldn't let it air.
Wasn't,
you couldn't get it there.
You could not get eventually people got satellites and you could get it on satellite.
Okay.
But you couldn't get it, like it was not allowed. So I hadn't seen music videos like everybody else. And the Kentucky Headhunters came on there and man, that guy had my brothers and I, when they would come on, we loved it.
One of those guys was from Leechville.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that Arkansas?
Yeah, up in Mississippi County.
Okay.
Yeah, the bass player.
Well, I am not surprised.
Okay, did y'all like...
like that wasn't played at y'all's wedding.
It was kind of a new trick I did. Played the song, but then described what was happening. Did you like that?
Yeah. What I didn't
put in there was when the drummer got up from the drum set to chase the bear, he actually went and turned on this little handmade auto drummer. Like, it was a joke.
I remember that.
He jumps up from the drum set, but the music's playing. So the music, like, the drum keeps going. And they had to figure out a way to fix that.
You know what's funny is when you said that, I thought, well, who's drumming now?
You actually thought that?
I did.
Well, okay, so in the music video, there's, like, a handmade, hand-drawn little box, and it says manual drum and auto drum, and he flicks it to auto drum and then jumps out the window and chases a bear. Yeah, okay.
I didn't even think anything about that.
Josh is a deep thinker. Elvis, this is a thinking
one of the
game.
Elvis movies, he was singing a song and he wanted the Jordanaires to back him up while he's riding his motorcycle down the road. They're like, Elvis, you can't have the Jordanaires singing. He said, where are we going to put him? He said, I guess the same place where the folks are playing the music. He's riding a motorcycle and singing.
All right. Question number two. I'm going to ask.
I know one of the questions you're going to ask. I know one of the. That's not fair because we're all going to answer at the same time if we know it.
Okay, just answer the question. Okay. What state was David Crockett born in?
I mean, I got the answer. It was Tennessee before it was tied into North Carolina,
okay,
right?
Okay, does anybody... But this is
it was
not
called
the
Franklin?
Answer.
Franklin?
Franklin!
Franklin!
Boom. So you
good
were
job,
on the right
Josh.
Track?
I was trying to remember. I knew that question was going to come up.
Yeah, it's what is now Tennessee. But at the time, it was considered the state of Franklin.
4 or 5 years,
which was like 4 years when there was a state named after Benjamin Franklin.
Well, he deserved
it was named
state.
After Benjamin Franklin.
That's what I think. Is there another Franklin? In American history?
Well, I'm sure there's several.
There's only one.
I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, one of the founding fathers.
Richard
Franklin.
Everybody, like even Kirk. The song says, born on a mountaintop in Tennessee. And the complicated version is, well, it actually wasn't Tennessee when he was born there. But did you get that right?
Yeah. Nothing
right. So you got
Franklin.
Two right?
Two.
He did say Franklin.
Josh, wow, the score is 2-0. Okay. At what age did David Crockett's father,
12.
John,
I was gonna say it.
First bond him out to work?
You know, I have never thought about that. Had I thought about bonding my kids, I would have gone into tons of debt.
Yeah.
I wish you could rent them out to the credit card company.
I got a son who will work anybody under the table, and I should have bonded him out years ago.
You should see if you can work something out with Visa or MasterCard just to have him work directly for them. Brent Reeves with the correct answer, 12.
12.
You know what I learned? So a good way to approach American history to me, just trying to understand what was going on, is when you're looking into this stuff, you just kind of learn about how life was by these details that don't seem to make a lot of sense or aren't that relevant. But what I learned inside of this is that it was extremely common for people to bond out their children, like have them like go live with people.
Here's was something that I thought was interesting. I thought, you know, at 12 years old, now we think about that is they're still a child for almost 10 more years, really.
Yeah.
But I looked up several different things that I researched said that the average lifespan of somebody back then was like 38.
Mm.
So that's really a quarter. Yeah. Somebody's already lived a quarter of their life by the time they're 12. It's time he got up and made something of himself.
I mean, that's a good people way were getting married at 13, 14, 15, yeah. 16.
Yeah. Really, I mean, I was like kidding, but I mean, yep. It's kind of wild to think about.
You know, whenever I look at pictures of my kids from the past year or even just a few months ago, I'm so amazed at how fast they're growing up. And then it hits me hard. I'm getting older too. That's why planning for my family's financial security has become a top priority. Making sure we're prepared and having enough life insurance in case something unexpected happens and I'm out of the picture is crucial. And Fabric by Gerber Life makes it simple to get the protection that's right for your family. Fabric by Gerber Life was designed by parents and for parents to help you get a high quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. You could go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. There's no risk to apply. They have a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel at any time. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/bear. That's M-E-E-T, fabric.com/bear, meetfabric.com/bear. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research and real-world testing of forage products specifically for whitetail deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at WhitetailInstitute.com. That's WhitetailInstitute.com and use code BEAR for 15% off. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more.
Okay, so the score is 1-2. Joe and Misty are
we're bringing
zero.
Up the rear.
Bringing up the rear. Okay.
Well, I think I should maybe get half points because I knew two of the answers.
Well,
this is
and I think okay. Joe should get a half point because he had an explanation for one of the answers.
I'll fight my way back.
Okay.
Okay. No, but I will, Joe.
The next round, David Crockett. Money.
David Crockett spoke of, he said that he had blank number of the most vicious bear dogs 57. In the South. Seven goes to Joe Wilson.
Good job.
Count
he
me.
Had seven. Of the most vicious nice job, bear Joe. Dogs in the South.
A white one and six black ones.
That's yep. right.
And the white one was a walker dog, Clay.
Well,
Banks.
It had to have been.
Like, and you think the other
like
six
there were
pots?
Other no,
no
other
no,
white
no,
dogs?
Negative. It for sure they for, so there's it's complete speculation. Crockett said that he did not like pure breed dogs.
Right.
He liked a mixed breed dog, which is common still today in a lot of places. People like the mixed breed dogs.
Hybrid vicar.
I guarantee you, one of his dogs wasn't bred with a poodle.
No, no, it wasn't a crocodoodle. That is the only indication of the type of dogs he had. Was he? I love it because he said, you know, he was baying this bear at night in the dark, and the only dog he could see was this white dog. And I think and walker hounds weren't really walker hounds by that time, but there were a lot of hounds from Europe coming in at that. I mean, all of our hounds obviously came from Europe, but George Washington was bringing in purebred hounds. The Plots in the 1750s first got here. And, you know, by the time Crockett was hunting in the early 1800s, the Plot breed would have been extremely tight there in eastern North Carolina, which that's right where Crockett was. I mean, Crockett would have been probably within less than 100 miles of where the Plots were at that time. So it's, you know, it's possible, but unlikely. He probably had just a mix of black and tan and English and running dogs and curs. They like to clip their tails. Houndsmen today typically don't clip their dogs' tails, especially in the East. In the West, they do. But Crockett said he loved a dog with a clipped tail. Later, we're going to see, in the next episode, we're going to hear about the most famous painting of Crockett, which was done in Manhattan, New York. And the painter, back in those days, when you painted someone, you actually just had to stand there.
Mm-hmm.
And they painted you. So it was like a days-long thing.
Right.
And he wanted a picture of himself. I'm spilling the beans. This is like my favorite part of the next episode.
Are you sure you want to do that?
This is the one where he's tipping the hat.
Yes. Yeah. That one. And I hadn't talked about it yet, so good job on that.
No extra points.
Half point to Joe Wilson. Oh. 1.5, 2-1. And he, the guy was just painting some random dogs on there. And Crockett was like, no. We got to go find some dogs that look – no. This is what it was. The guy was painting these purebred dogs that he had got from somewhere in New York. And Crockett was like, we got to find some dogs that look like Tennessee Bear dogs.
Yuppie dogs.
They went to the streets and got these mongrel dogs and brought them back in. And Crockett was like, they look like it. Yes. Here we are. Question number four. This is a fill-in-the-blank question. This is a quote from Crockett. He said, if a fellow is born to be hung, he will never be drowned. And further, if he is born
for
blank,
hung.
Even flour barrels can't make mash of him.
Nope.
Let me read it again.
If
a fellow is
I'm
born,
trying to remember.
This is one of my favorite
quotes.
Is it quotes.
Drown?
No. Well, listen, you're looking for a word, but this is one of my favorite Crockett quotes. He said, if you're born to be hung, you'll never be drowned. Right. I explained that today to my son.
Mm-hmm.
I love that quote. He said, if a fellow's born to be hung, he'll never be drowned. And further, if he is born for blank, even flour barrels can't mash up. Congress is correct.
This guy.
I knew it was in there.
Yeah. Three.
I'm
going to
listen
three,
next time.
One.
I listened to the podcast once at regular speed and a second time at 1.5
no,
speed.
Really?
So it all
you can
really
listen to
Clay
at 1.5. I listen at 1.25. I can't 1. Get that 5, guy at 1.5. 1. That's pretty impressive.
I mainly listen to it because I like hearing the...
Yeah, it's so fun, yeah.
I think a podcast is totally ruined if you have to up the speed.
That's what Clay thinks.
I'm a 1X guy.
Yeah,
is that like this film has been edited to fit to format your screen? Remember when they used to do that?
Oh, yeah. Man, I actually wish I could do that to people.
Yeah,
like in real life conversations,
kind of speed this up a little bit.
Let's
you're pointing
at
Josh when you did that.
Yeah. Misty.
So Crockett, in Crockett's biography, I think it's important to note this. So Daniel Boone, I made this statement like four times because I think it's important. Daniel Boone became this American archetype. Daniel Boone was like a generation before Crockett. Boone, we have this image of him that's really pristine, and I think it's partly because we never really saw Boone's humanity from his own voice.
Yeah.
There were all these autobiographies of Boone were lost or destroyed. And so Boone is kind of this mysterious guy that we never actually heard from him in his own voice. And Boone has this kind of mythical figure because of that. Crockett was so genuine, vulnerable, and real in his autobiography, I think it is detrimental to him. And the autobiography is laced with political stuff. And it kind of bugged me because it's like every time he was talking, he would say, but at that time, I didn't know that one day I would be great and sit amongst the greatest men of the world. Like he kind of was self-aggrandizing quite a bit.
Because he still had an agenda of being president.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so he, you know, I was thinking about this through the show. When you're a state representative, you're there for 2 years, right? And so as soon as you get elected, you're trying to get reelected, which is kind of a flaw in our whole deal. If you gave those guys a five-year term, maybe a single five-year term, that way you're not worried about getting reelected and self-promoting as much as you are taking care of your folks in business in your region.
Don't bring common sense into this,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But that's how I got it. And you know, you talked about him being a self-promoter.
Yeah.
I mean, he would be a star on Twitter or YouTube or whatever. Yeah. That's who he was.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he was always bringing up his political career inside his autobiography.
And that's probably why people don't like him. Like, that's the legacy. If that's his autobiography, that's before, the legacy.
I said it before. If he'd had a good editor, an editor could have toned him down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm being honest. I think a lot of people might write something like that, but it goes through so many. They would be like, hey, that sounds... People said that to me before, believe it or not, Joe. they'd be like, hey, when you say it like that, it sounds this way or that.
I wonder if that correlated to the style of the time, though.
And I agree.
When you had to be the loudest, when the loudest guy got heard.
Or that he was a Southern frontiersman. And everybody in the East thought he was going to be an idiot regardless.
Yeah.
From the cane.
Yeah, he kind of had a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, he had to fight his way through. And
It was style of the time. And what we heard from Robert Morgan is that Crockett, like, emerged as, you know, some would say America's first big celebrity, that someone that was famous in their own time, that knew about their fame, that interacted with their fame, had plays made about them, had a global bestseller book. And he, the way he talked and the way he communicated impacted like the next 100 years of literature. And he probably wasn't the only one, but he was a big voice inside of that. So like him just being verbose and talking about himself and jumping the Ohio and whipping wildcats and all this stuff. Like, I don't think he was the one that created that. I think he heard people like that on the American frontier, but he was the first guy that had a mouthpiece that was talking like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he liked that and he probably took it a little.
And then it gave probably one of the greatest storytellers of all time, Sam Clemens, gave him a catapult to move on and be Mark Twain.
Did he ever learn to read?
Crockett?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Did I miss that? Was that in this one?
Yeah, you missed that. That was question number one. The next question was, okay, where did Crockett learn to read?
Well, when you ask it again, I'm going to ask it like, did he ever learn to read?
Is that really one of the questions?
No, it's not. It's
Canada.
Not. Bam! Bonus point.
Wow.
Where was it?
No. Canada. Yeah, the guy
So the honest Quaker, Canada, was
Quaker.
This like really straight-laced influence in Crockett's life. Crockett was just like a poverty-stricken, rough back. I mean, you get the feeling his dad really loved
him. Party animal.
But his dad was a rough man. Just like a rough, old, just frontiersman pushed by poverty, was constantly running from being bankrupt and crisis after crisis. His dad had grist mill. Man, pretty much in American history, if you read about, here's a hot tip. If you're reading about American history and you see, and then they borrowed some money to have a grist mill, guaranteed it's going to get washed away in a flood and cause them to go bankrupt.
You're going
to
be sad.
Every time. Happened to Boone, happened to Crockett, happened to every single person that ever had a grist mill. So don't get into that business. But Canada was a big influence on Crockett that kind of – and there's been people like that. I identified with that. Like people – I made a statement about how – people outside of your immediate family, when you're in this influential age, really do influence you. I know men that, and not that your family does something wrong, but you're just family. It's like you come out with this worldview from your family, and then you kind of, you see there's other ways to do things. Okay. Question number five. What European capital city did Crockett almost sail to at the age of 14?
Paris.
Wrong.
London.
Bam, Misty Nukem with one.
I remember that.
Yeah,
all
Crockett.
Right.
We were like, literally, Crockett's, the guy Crockett was working with physically restrained him from getting on a boat and sailing to London. And who knows? He may have got over there and stayed and never come back.
Yep.
It was interesting when he was just a kid. Okay, Mark Twain was born how many months before Crockett died at the Alamo? If you remember.
Oh, yeah.
I talked about how their lives overlapped.
Four.
Who said that?
I did.
Brentley.
Brent Reeves, 4 months. So.
What was that, got 10
Mark
now?
Twain
and I got
and Davy Crockett, their lives overlapped by 4 months. I'm fascinated by thinking about our lifespans. Yep. And, you know, I talked about how I was born in 1979. You do the math. I mean, if somebody was 80 years old.
You know, my great-grandfather, who I knew well, was born in 1898.
Wow.
And I'd love to listen to him tell stories. Pretty amazing.
So if that were extrapolated back, how much older was he than you?
Well, he would have been 96 when he died, and that was probably 1992.
So you would have been like 10, so he would have been like 80-something years older than
1992,
you?
1992, I was 16.
So...
What I'm saying is
76.
76. So there's about a 70.
Oh yeah, he was 88 years older.
Now what the math I'm trying to do though is if he was born in 1898 and he was 10 years old, he would have could have been interacting with people born in the 1830s or something.
Yeah.
So technically he could have known men that would have known Davy Crockett.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you could go, like, if you go 80 years back, say, like, our World War II guys.
Yep.
Those, you go 80 years back from that, and that was Civil War guys, and you go 80 years back from that, and it's the independence.
Yeah.
And so if you take that, because we got the 250th anniversary coming up.
Yeah.
We're not that far removed from the founding fathers of this country, which that's some pretty amazing history. If you just sit back and think about it for a minute.
Yeah.
And so I'm right there with you. I think this is amazing, the overlap.
Yeah. You don't think, you hear the 1800s, and it's like that might as well have been like
dinosaurs.
10,000. Yeah, dinosaurs. Yeah. But it's not. Yeah.
I was 16 or 17 when my great grandfather died, and he was born in 1891.
Really?
Yep. I'm sitting there. I just did the census thing.
So you're.
Because I couldn't remember.
Great grandfather,
my great grandfather,
and you knew him.
So same,
yes.
About the same difference in age between your great grandfather and my great grandfather.
Nuke and our family.
He was born in 1891.
Your daughters knew.
They're great.
Well, on my side, their great great grandparents held them.
Yeah.
It was my great grandparents.
Right.
And they're, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. Okay, so the score is. Two.
I've got
14.
Two.
One.
One. Three. One.
Yes, how do you get three?
Joe's one. Josh is three. Misty one. 14. Brent
how
Reeves,
many questions are left?
Two. There are two questions left.
Okay.
Okay.
Two questions left.
I can
what
tie
was
up.
The name of Crockett's first rifle, a 48 caliber flintlock? Who said it first?
I got
Brent
Betsy.
Did.
Bam.
Joe's a cheater.
I'm sorry.
Joe was making it up just like he did the world championship squirrel cook-off. What's that?
It was named after his sister.
It was named after his sister, but it wasn't him that named it.
Well, yeah.
Well, that wasn't the question.
Well, he did
sit
call
down,
his
Rainbow.
Rifle Betsy.
Okay, so he called
but
it Betsy?
He did officially call his rifle Betsy, but the rifle that I actually got to hold in Knoxville was not most
Betsy.
Likely
not
the
Betsy.
Rifle that he called Betsy.
But he called, did he call all of his?
In the podcast, I was a little confused. It was unclear.
Yeah. I think this is more where you get into the mythology because really the only hard evidence the primary source data that you have about David Crockett is that book right there, A Narrative of the Life of David Crockett by David Crockett. And he never mentions Betsy in that book.
He didn't.
Yeah, he doesn't talk about Betsy. But, you know, there were a lot of people that knew Crockett that wrote about him that would have brought
he
that
up. He looks just like Fess Parker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks just like Daniel Boone to me.
So what did y'all think about was it cool?
MJ.
Oh yeah. was that a good one?
It was a good one.
That was clickbait. I live for being able to do stuff like that on a podcast. Like put Michael Jordan on there and do some really deep metaphor or analogy that probably nobody gets. Yeah. But
I actually took it a step further and I had to research old Betsy a little bit more, and I watched YouTube video and seen the rifle, and where they talked about they had to reconstruct the forearm of the rifle, and because it was in such bad state whenever he purchased it.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting whole deal. I mean, you can sit and watch YouTube videos for about 10 hours on a Sunday on Davy Crockett if you want to.
Yeah. So you saw Joe Swan.
I did.
He's on the internet.
Yeah, all over it.
Man, he is a really nice guy. He and his son were like super nice guys, really genuine, really just loved Crockett their whole life. I mean, Joe did. Joe's probably in his 70s.
Yeah.
And it was interesting how he got that rifle.
Does he still have the ramrod?
Yeah. I don't know if it's the original.
Would you say would be the thing that you have in your possession that would be as close to him owning that rifle? Anybody? Has anybody got a piece of history?
You know, now this doesn't count totally. Somebody else can go after me. But in some ways it does. Right behind you, about 3 feet from you, is a flintlock muzzleloader that James Lawrence gave me. My old-time hero. He's still alive. But he gave me that, his old Hawken 50 caliber, several years ago. That's special to me. It happens to be a flintlock. Just like
it had to
one.
Be our family Bible. It was printed in 1836, and it's got dates in there written of people born in the late 1700s when they purchased that Bible and started writing the Reeves family history in it. And I've got that. That would be
pretty big.
What an interesting question.
That's pretty big.
Obviously, my wedding ring.
Yeah, I was gonna say my wife's wedding ring has diamonds from my great grandmother. Both my maternal and paternal grandmothers, and one from me.
Yeah.
I've got an old single shot 410. It's a fold over, like you could put it in a saddlebag. It's got a notch in the buttstock where the trigger guard slides in there.
Oh.
That my great grandmother used to shoot at rats in the dairy barn.
All right.
And I've got that hung up on the wall. I think that's family history-wise, that's probably the most important one that I got. Short of my grandpa's cowboy hat, that means a lot to me as well. But.
Nice. That's a good question. So, the score is, Brent?
3.
Misty?
14.
1. Josh?
3.
You're still 3? 2. Yeah. Wow.
That's a lot for 7 Josh questions.
I thought you said you had 7 questions.
Where'd you get a third question?
I just answered one right.
You did not. Joe, you've got 2. Joe's got 2. I've got 3. You're a cheater.
That's 7.
Okay.
Calling you out.
Wow.
Wow.
Those fighting words.
Words.
If if that was a lie, I would.
Final question, and this would be a tiebreaker potentially, or we may just have to go for a tie. Or
slam dunk for Misty.
Play the drop, Phil.
Okay. In the podcast, I talked about what part of the bear did Hunter's and Crockett's time.
Bladder.
Bam! Joe Wilson.
Joe
used to transport the rendered bear oil.
That was a bladder.
And the answer was a dried bladder.
That's true a tie. Story. You got to go to the tiebreaker.
We got a three-part tie. Misty, can you think of a question? A tie-breaking question.
Yeah, what about with... Can I just go ahead and ask it?
Yeah, this is tiebreaker. Whoever gets it wins.
Who's tied?
I'm thinking about
y'all three
are all tied.
He's got 2.
He says I still
he's
got
a
2.
Cheater.
I think he's got 3.
I
How many
3.
Questions have we had? 9 questions?
9 out of 7.
I don't know. I don't know. You got a question?
When was he jilted? And by who?
When?
Oh, wow. I don't even know the answer to that.
I don't know.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
That was
her name on the podcast.
That was the Quaker guy. Man.
Did it say what year?
No.
He was 17. Was he 17?
Mm, I don't think we got into dates on that one.
And her name started with an L.
Okay, I got one.
The night before his wedding is what I would have accepted.
That's true.
What is the name of Crockett's first wife?
Polly.
Josh Filmmaker's our winner.
You know what I get? He's going to get a bottle of Wilsonshire.
Winner gets a bottle of Wilsonshire sauce. You're going to want to eat this tonight.
That was worth it.
You're going to want to cook with it tonight.
You're going to cook with it, Josh.
And you got to drink it right
now. And depending on how you behave, I'll autograph it.
Hey, Joe's face is on the bottle of Wilsonshire.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it. It's got cowboy hat, big mustache.
Yeah, man.
It was a right marketing move for your face.
Can I tell you my favorite part of the podcast?
Yes.
My favorite part of the podcast was when he showed up, when he was, I don't remember what, but after he had worked for Canada Day.
15.
Is that after he worked for Canada Day? When he had the $40 bond, mm-hmm. and he walked back and he set it down in front of his dad, and his dad said, "I don't have money for that." And he said, "I took care of it."
Yeah.
I was like, That's the kind of thing that, like, well, first of all, it pulls at the heartstrings a little bit because I love the sacrifice and commitment. I mean, this is for a dad who bonded you out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But just the commitment and then the lack of, I mean, he could have done it and been, you know, held a grudge about it, but he didn't. And I love that it said that his dad, who repeatedly was referred to as a, you know, the what was the name of the Irish?
Ulster Scott.
Yeah. Yes. Would have been a rough man. I mean, he ran a tavern, that he shed many tears over that. And I thought, that's the kind of thing that after years of, I'm sure they probably didn't have a great relationship, that's the kind of thing that builds a bond there, that makes that father and son dynamic right.
It was the right thing to do. And I go back to that, talking about that too, Josh. I don't think it was an anomaly. There was probably a lot of that stuff going on. He was just unfortunate enough to be one of the, out of that litter of nine, wasn't it nine?
Mm-hmm.
That had to go pay that off. So I think it was the right thing.
Most people, maybe not most people, a lot of people would know the high points of Crockett's life. When you're trying to tell a big story like this, you know, there's some things you just have to leave out and some things you want to add in. I felt like everybody knows a lot of the big Crockett stuff, but his childhood, actually what made him who he was, I felt like was really important. And I actually kind of felt like maybe this podcast would be a little boring because it's kind of like small stuff. Like, you know, I included when he took that canoe across the river. He included that in his autobiography. Basically, I just went through the autobiography and included most of the, not maybe not even most, but some percentage of the stories. I wanted to include the stuff about his dad. I wanted to include the stuff about him coming home and no one recognizing him. You remember that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like he walks back into his own house.
Yep.
Gets a room from one of his family members, sets down at the table, and one of his sisters recognizes him.
Because he had matured so much.
Yeah.
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 And Crockett, to his own detriment, always showed his cards.
Yeah.
In a genuine way. He said when they embraced me and my dad embraced me, even though he was mad at me when I left. And he said it made me wish I had never put them through all this stuff. When Crockett was jilted the day before his wedding. And I'm saying this because the next episode, you see Crockett's blunder, which Crockett did kind of screw his life up eventually.
Wow, that's good. Effective.
Yeah. Little foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Tune in next week.
Very effective.
Crockett, like when he talked about getting jilted, I listened to that part today, and he went into great detail, vulnerable detail in his autobiography about how it hurt him when this woman left him, like literally the day
you
before
would have thought
the wedding.
Back then, they would have just brushed over it like, oh, no big deal.
He was a man just like any of us.
Yeah.
And that's what's cool about Crockett. You don't know that stuff about Boone. Nothing. It's a mystery. Right. It's a mystery what went on with Boone and but Crockett, you see him full scale, and he represented an archetype really of manhood in America and the frontier that I believe today is still active, for better or worse. That's why these things are so interesting to me, because it's like we wake up and are born into something that tells us what has value. And that's why I think this stuff is interesting, to look back at why we think the way we think. And obviously people like us, people connected to hunting specifically, but just rural America. And it's not just hunters that are connected to Crockett. I mean, he set a template for a lot of different stuff, but I like to learn where, mm-hmm. you know, our, well, I'm going to get into more in the next episode.
I'm going to get into more.
Yeah. So, closing comments. Joe, it's been great to have you, man.
Really great, Danny.
It was so good hearing about the squirrel cook-off September 23rd.
Yeah.
Springdale, Arkansas, man. Be there. Brent's going to for sure be there.
Yep.
I've got a trip, but I think I'm going to be back by that time.
Well, we'd love to have all your listeners. And like I say, they could pay attention to that Facebook page. I'm old school. I don't have all the other ones.
All right.
But on Facebook, you could look up the World Champion Squirrel Cook-Off. And hey, could I give – we also have a podcast.
Yes, absolutely.
Our podcast is called Cooking Up a Story, and we try to put faces on common people. And because so many people get overlooked, we don't pay attention to the guy that makes the donuts. We don't know who that person is. So we drag in common people and we dig deep into their start of their life all the way up to current. And we get better because of it. So
it's a really neat podcast.
Yeah.
What was the one you sent me?
I sent you the Donut Man.
Yeah.
And so I had a curiosity why every time I went to the donut shop, there was an Asian guy making my donuts. And come to find out, they're all Cambodian. And this guy had survived the killing fields. He was a Buddhist monk. He was enslaved several times in his life. And he prayed to Jesus, wound up in New York City, and became an American as a Buddhist.
That episode is phenomenal.
It's, yeah.
And Joe, he's giving you the short version, which is good. But basically, Joe just said a stereotype that anybody in America would probably recognize. That a lot of donut shops are run by Asian people. I mean, that's not like, that's just, it happens. Joe went to his local donut shop and just interviewed the guy that owned the shop. This is a short version. And this guy has the most phenomenal story you've ever heard in
your life. It's amazing. I mean, this guy needs a movie.
Yeah, what's his name?
Lang Tang.
Lang Tang.
And
it's called, what's it called?
It's Cooking Up a Story, and that episode is...
The podcast is Cooking Up a Story. The episode is...
Donut Guy.
Donut Guy.
And
it's phenomenal.
I mean, that's how we look at people,
sure.
Right? That's the guy that pours the concrete.
The mailman.
That's the plumber. That's the mailman.
Yeah.
And we've surrounded ourselves with all these people, and back in time, I'm saying when I was a pup, we knew those people's names.
Right.
And one of the problems with society right now is you push a button, you buy something, you don't know nothing about it.
Yeah.
You don't even know the guy that dropped it off on your front porch. So we're trying to find common people who have exceptional stories. And unless we sit down with them, those stories are lost. Yeah. So that's the game we're playing.
Everybody's got one.
And then the guy across from me wearing the overalls, man, how about his show?
Yeah, man. This week, this Country Live with Brent Reeves. Squirrel dogs.
Squirrel dogs. Talking all about them. Get you prepped up for going to the
World
Championship.
Right.
Good stuff.
Great show, man. Looking forward to the rest. We're getting into the Alamo.
We will later.
Gotcha.
It's getting close. All right. Keep the wild places wild. And get your Wilson shark sauce.
Break out the case.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greece today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Greece.